Hi everybody and welcome to the new Leisure Wheels podcast. As you've seen in the stores, we have a new magazine and with it a new podcast. And this podcast will feature all the latest 4x4 news and it will be delivered in our own unique voice. In other words, we're just going to sit here and talk rubbish about cars for a few minutes or however long it takes you to get home. The first thing we're going to discuss, and I've got Dion, who's the new guy in the office with me, is the Aussie shootout from last month's magazine, The Last of the Old Design. It was basically Donny, our editor, flew to Australia to have a shootout with the new Hilux, the facelifted Ranger, the Triton, and the new Navara. And the Hilux came out on top. Which one of those is your favorite, Dion?
Give me personally, something. I'd go for the Ranger.
Good.
Yeah, it just looks so much more butch, you know.
Okay.
I do like the grow. It's very American, and I actually fell in love with that American trucks.
Yeah. I get
the big grow.
The big
prominent grow. Deadlights. That kind of things.
We actually have a Hilux standing outside, and before the new Hilux came to the office, I was a firm fan of the Amarok, as you know.
Mm.
But I have to say, I've changed, and my favorite is now Hilux.
Hypocrite.
Yeah, I know. It's just that good. The one thing, however, is that I'm annoyed with is I like the previous gen Hilux because I'm a big fan of Red Bull, and the Hilux is the only car that could fit a Red Bull in the cup holder.
And didn't you mention the Audi Q7 as well?
The Audi Q7 as well. It does a very good job, but the best one has always been the Hilux for holding a Red Bull. The new one doesn't do it so well, and I'm a bit miffed about that. And but the thing with the Ranger for me is, and this is especially the Wild Track, whenever I see one of those coming down and it's orange, I think to myself, that dude is overcompensating for something else.
Yeah, must be.
Yeah,
especially with all of those off-road gear as well.
Yeah, yeah.
The snorkel,
exactly.
Race suspension, everything.
I can sort of understand if you're into hardcore off-roading why you would have that, but if you're going to drive it down here in Johannesburg, it's just, it's so senseless. But, I mean, the Hilux for now is quite sedate, but in, I don't know how many years it will be, it's going to be Legend 50 is the next one.
Yeah.
We had Legend 45, 2 years ago or something?
Yeah, around there.
Yeah. So, Legend 50 is coming. That will probably be as outlandish as a Wild Track, I can imagine. In any case, there's something else we need to discuss with the Hilux. We've seen a lot of this comment online. Is the new Hilux ugly?
Yes, it is.
Do you think so?
Yes. This morning, actually, I thought to myself, listen here, that Hilux actually looks like a whale.
Yeah.
It is just so massive, it looks awkward.
Yeah.
And that massive overhangs at the front end, you know. I mean, it looks like a blue whale.
I've been looking at that car for months now. And 2 weeks back, somebody sent me an image of what it looks like. And you know the dog Steven. Do you know the dog Steven?
No.
He's the ugliest dog in the world. And his name is called Steven.
Okay.
And it looks like he's the bottom half of his... of his face has been knocked away in a punch. You know, like his top and lower jaw are not properly aligned. So he looks a bit like Steven, you know, the ugliest dog in the world.
Steven the Hilux.
Yeah. Thing is, we had a discussion about this yesterday. I think the general consensus is the Hilux looks exactly like it should look like. It's still tough, it's still rough, but it's still a bit meh. You know, it's not.
Yeah.
It's not ugly, it's not beautiful, it's just
not. It's not as butch as some South Africans would actually like.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's one of the reasons why they buy a Hilux, because it's tough.
Yeah. And the most important thing with that car is Toyota sold 1,000 in the first week. And that's not even, there's extra cabs and single cab workhorses aren't even available at a dealership for all yet. It's just double cabs. So they did 1,000 in a week, and that's more than like Citroen, Porsche, what else put together in a year?
Or basically the KB and the Amarok put together in a month.
In a month. To put it into double cab perspective.
Yeah.
Okay, so moving swiftly along from the ugly Hilux and into the big news stories of the week. Okay, so few things happened this week and last week as well. When we do this in the future, it will be broken down into weeks, but since it's the first one, we've taken the liberty of having a few new stories from last week as well. First topic is the Audi Q2.
Glorified Polo, you mean?
In a glorified Polo, as it's been called on the internet. The smallest Audi SUV to date. Yes, Audi have motored with SUVs.
Yeah.
I mean, if you consider like 10 years ago, they had one. Mm. The first one, the Q7. Mm. And now all of a sudden, what do we have now?
That was Q7. A bit of a foreign concept for Audi at the time.
Yeah.
Now we've become so accustomed to it.
Yeah. Now we have Q7, Q5, Q3.
All of its derivatives, you know.
And Q2.
Yes, that's about right, yeah.
As Dion said, it's basically a glorified Polo.
It looks
like a Polo. It looks a lot like a Polo, just a bit beefed up. Just like if you put a Polo in a photocopier and said 20% bigger.
Yes.
And put some Audi roundels in the front. That's what the Q2 looks like, if you haven't seen a picture of it yet. It's obviously going to sell well.
Yeah, no, I think so. You know, the crossover market in South Africa is massive. Yeah. And it's not just limited to South Africa as well. Even in Europe. It's off the charts.
Yeah,
how many crossovers were actually sell them?
Yeah. And you have, you have Oaks who are willing to pay a premium for a premium brand. I mean, at the moment we have the BMW X1. What else is there in that sort of premium? Although I suppose that competes more with the Q3. But, now I think of it, it's probably going to be the first compact crossover premium sort of thingy to come here. It's going to come here. We don't know yet with what engines, but front-wheel drive is standard, I think. And then you have Quattro. Yes.
Quattro is an option.
Yeah.
But also there's the extensive Audi options list. Basically, as a base price, you start at half a mil already.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money. For a 20% enlarged Polo.
Yeah.
You know.
You just start thinking, why not just buy a cross Polo?
Yeah, why not? Just put on some Audi badging on there. Nobody will probably notice.
Okay, so engines. We're looking at, I think it's 1 liter three-cylinder, if I remember correctly. Then 1.4 and diesels and what?
The TFSI engine, which is the petrol one, and the TDI, we all know so well.
Yeah.
It's making a comeback in this one. There's also another option is the Audi S-tronic dual clutch gearbox.
Okay.
Yeah, so that will be...
It's probably going to be a good and decently handling car as opposed to a sort of gravel road machine sort of thing. What I like most about new Audis, and this one, it'll probably have it as an option as well, is the virtual cockpit thing. I first experienced this in a Q7. A while ago, and how does virtual cockpit work for you?
I haven't experienced it in an SUV before, but I have experienced it in an Audi TT.
Yes.
You do need an IT degree basically to operate it.
Yeah,
after almost a week, I basically just got the hang of it.
Yeah.
And I'm in my 20s, so imagine for
you're the supposed elderly to be savvy with this sort of thing. Yeah.
Yes.
So here's like a top tip: if you're going to buy an Audi with a virtual cockpit,
have
the dealer Oak talk you through it before you leave.
No, definitely. Because or else you won't be able to use it to its fullest potential.
Yeah, you're gonna sit there with a manual,
and
as we know, dudes don't do manuals. You know, we don't read car manuals.
Yeah, I remember.
So you're being left there to sit and sort of figure it out for yourself.
Yeah, my first two test cars were the only ones I ever read a manual. You know, so I spent a week, you know, every night a bit of a chapter. But that's about it. After a while you get over it. It's like it's a waste of time, you think, but
I only read one car manual in my life, and that was when I got a Ford car at Vosti. But it was more pamphlet, you know. It's not like a car.
Was that as small as the car?
Yeah, it was probably, and my car didn't even have an aircon, you know, so it's not much to talk about.
The indicators is in the left-hand position, or was it right? I can't remember.
The poor Oku sort of sat there with who had to write the car's manual, it's like, oh, what do I have to work with? You know, there's absolutely nothing. Yeah. Like, this is your Ford car, you know.
It's got 5 gears. There's a reverse.
yeah. If you want to reverse, put it in reverse. Anyways, getting a bit off topic to get us back. Other big Audi news is the Audi SQ7, which we know is coming to South Africa. I know. Q7 is currently my favorite large luxury SUV.
Big fan.
And we're going to get a bit nerdy now, because the SQ7 is quite special. It's the most powerful diesel production SUV ever.
It's almost supercar territory.
Yeah.
I mean, considering it's a diesel, that is quite an achievement, really.
Yeah. And Audi has an awesome history with building fast SUVs.
Mm.
Under the radar, the SQ5. Mm. Oh, what a magnificent machine.
I wish I could drive it.
Performance shootout last year. It's actually been faster than a Jeep SRT8, which is, that's how properly fast that thing is.
The Jeep SRT8's got the biggest engine.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, 6.4.
In an SUV lineup, yeah.
Yeah.
It's naturally aspirated.
It was absolutely stunning. I mean, once it gets going, it just never stops. This one is, it's not the V12 turbo diesel.
No.
Although that was special as well.
Yeah,
this is a new 4-liter V8 TDI bi-turbo. What's cool about this car, and we apologize if we're sounding a bit nerdy now, is it will have an electric driven compressor, which they hope eliminates turbo lag. So it'll start boosting from 25 milliseconds. I don't think you can feel 25 milliseconds, to be honest. I mean, that's what a gear change in a properly sorted gearbox is about these days. Yeah. Any case, you won't be able to feel 25 milliseconds. So from the moment you put your foot on the pedal to the moment that thing starts is 25 milliseconds, which means turbo lag is virtually eliminated. The other cool thing it does is 320 kilowatts. But here's the big one. 900 newton meters of torque.
Yeah, we talked about it the other day. That's enough to basically jumpstart South Africa's economy.
Yeah, you know? I mean, yes, you just accelerate half of the line and boom, you know, the rand's at 5 rand to a dollar again. What an insane thing. I mean, 8-speed gearbox, quattro, obviously, because can you imagine what?
I want to find out, actually.
0 to 100, 4.8 seconds. Yes, I can't wait to drive it.
I'm talking under correction, but I think that's actually quicker than a Bentley Continental.
Yeah, it is probably. Yeah.
BMW X5 M territory?
Yeah. Close to it, yeah.
Is it?
I think 4.2 for...
Okay.
Yeah. What I always use as a sort of performance indicator is when I was in high school, I think it was the E46 M3 came out.
Mm-hmm.
With that 3.2 six-cylinder.
Uh-huh.
And that did 0 to 100 in 5.2 seconds. I remember thinking, yes, that's fast.
Mm.
That's insane fast. That's not fast anymore, though.
Yeah.
Considering that an over 2-ton SUV
with a diesel engine,
0 to 104.8 these days.
Yeah, usually, especially in Formula One, we are so accustomed to weight is the enemy. Mm. You know, I mean, this is a 2-ton SUV that accelerates from 0 to 100 in under 5 seconds, 4.8 to be precise. And, I mean, that is spectacular.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, being a diesel will likely be economical as well.
Mm.
The 3-liter V16 Q7 does 8.3 liters per 100 kilometers. Tested at Leisure Wheels, which is stunning. I mean, can you imagine that kind of performance? Likely be around 2 liters per hundred kilometers, looking around 10, 11.
Yeah, but come on, let's be honest. Who's going
to do it? Like, its estimated price is 1.5 mil. If you can afford 1.5 mil, you're likely not going to worry about diesel consumption too much.
Yeah, I mean, let's put this in context with a Gelandewagen. What's their starting price?
Over 2 million.
Over 2 million. I mean, this thing is probably quicker than a Gelandewagen.
Oh, no, it's definitely. Definitely. Mm. I just think it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun.
Mm.
I would like one of those in white with all the badges removed. And I'd just go GTI hunting. Just look for Oaks and GTIs going, oh, you want a race boot? And then just like pull away and just leave him for dead. Yeah. Just be like,
on.
You know, the tsunami. You've just been beaten by an SUV.
Yeah, what I actually like about these fast SUVs is actually stopping next to something like Golf GTI and letting them know, listen here, this machine is quicker than your little car. Come on. If you want a dice, confirm it, let's go for it.
Yeah, bring a big boy's car. Yeah, not a toy, you know?
Yeah.
Come to a race prepared, Oak. Any case, talking about another large SUV, the Volvo XC90, car of the year.
Controversy.
But there's always controversy with car of the year. Definitely. It's never like, people can never just say and go like, it's a good choice.
Mm. In the last 4 years, sorry for interrupting you, I think it's the third SUV that has won.
Yeah.
The Cayenne isn't.
No, it's the second SUV to win. The Macan was first last year.
And but now, didn't Cayenne also win it at some point?
No, I don't think so.
Is
it? About a few minutes ago, I was reading and I saw somewhere that only two SUVs have won. I assume the Macan is the other one. I don't know. We're not involved with Car of the Year. So we're just basically commenting on it. We're happy an SUV won, I think, considering that SUVs are on the up and up. It's cool that an SUV won. The Guild is awarding them according to the whole range now. And considering that you can have a hybrid model with a 50-kilometer electric only range, you can sort of see it as a massive step forward in all regards, which is what this competition is all about.
It's not just an SUV that can go all out. You know? It's a bit of forward thinking almost.
For the record, we think at Leisure Wheels, if you're going to do model to model, we did a shootout with the Q7 3-liter diesel versus the D5. And we think the Q7 is better. Model for model. That's what we said in print. We're going to stand by.
That says a lot. I mean, the SQ7 should be better than the standard Q7.
Yeah.
And that is really saying a lot.
Yeah.
Sorry to get off topic.
No. There are no rules here. Okay, so in any case, the XC90. The main issue we had with it, you had Leisure Wheels. The car just felt a bit paranoid. And not that comfy off-road. It was wonderful to drive in the city. We just cruise around effortlessly. But you take it on a gravel section and it falls apart a bit. Okay. And safety systems are a bit paranoid. This is before you started working here. You haven't driven in either one of them.
No. Okay.
So let me tell you what happened. I drove it on a gravel road, not even at speed or something. And all of a sudden, I was just gripped in my seat, like the seatbelt just sort of pulled me back into my seat. And I was like, yo, that's weird. And the car was throwing all sorts of errors and stuff at me. I can't remember exactly what it said, but, you know, it was preparing for a crash. And I'm like, what crash? You know, like, we're not even remotely near a crash. And then our editor at that time, Yanni, went out also on a gravel road to go scout a place to take some pictures of it. And the same thing happened to him. Like, it just sort of, I think the worst thing happened to Donnie when he was driving it. He was just simply mincing down on Dakesh in Joburg. And the car just suddenly braked with no other car in anywhere near him.
It seems to just happen sort of quite a lot to Donnie then.
The car just sort of braked. Like, you know, it slowed down and it said like collision prevention, something along those lines.
There's a weed in the way.
Yeah, something's in the way. You know, you're going to bump into it. And Donnie was just like, there's nothing here, Oak. You know? So it's a little bit paranoid, but you have to wonder. Then we started discussing all of these autonomous driving systems and safety systems and all of that are tuned for European drivers, which, let's face it, are much better than we are. Dion hasn't, you haven't been overseas yet.
No.
But the standard of driving there is magnificent, sublime. Really? So people there respect one another and the spaces around their vehicles.
And they properly, you know, adhere to the rules of the road. You know, okay, I know in Germany it's keep right, pass left, I think.
Yeah.
You know, and from other journalists I also hear that rule, that is the number one rule on the road.
Yeah.
If all else fails, just keep right and pass left.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, what annoys me is, most of all, and this has to do with active cruise control, which, you know, you'll set the car to keep a set distance from the car in front of you. Mm. And it'll use radar and whatever to brake itself. Mm. Now, the smallest distance you can set is sort of like one car length, which I like to call the BMW tailgater setting. Okay,
but that's enough space for a taxi.
That's enough space for a taxi. Mm. Or for any other Joburg driver, for that matter.
Yeah.
I mean, you drive down an N1
they can fit a
and
car
leave that in, gap in there, space, yeah. somebody will mission in there, and the car will break like, immediately.
Mm.
No, that will never happen in Europe. They'll see that and they'll say like, okay, that's the safe following distance.
Maybe in fact, Russia. Actually,
I met a Russian once and he wouldn't let you get away with that gap because there's no chance. So we're wondering about how these safety systems fit into a South African context.
Mm.
I mean, do they ask too much of South African drivers in the first place? And, you know, is it possible to set them up better for South Africa?
Yeah.
I mean, we like to, you know, I sort of get it like the XC90 was thinking, oh, this oak is pushing too hard or something's going to happen. And I like the idea that it keeps you safe. But, I don't know what that says about South African drivers, though.
Yeah. Another issue that I have with these active safety systems, including the active cruise control now, is that this might be an excuse for people to text while they are driving.
Mm.
I mean, remembering back, I've also driven quite a few cars which were fitted with the active cruise control, and it was such a relaxing experience.
Mm.
And I remember I felt like, listen here, I don't actually have to concentrate this hard right now.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the car is doing most of the work. I just have to see it, keep it on the road. And I am really scared for the day that people will have the mentality of, listen, I can just take it easy. I don't have to concentrate now and start texting away. I mean, it's already such a problem. Imagine what it's going to be like in the future if all cars are fitted to this, with these active safety systems.
You make a good point. I actually wrote about this, I think 2 years ago, about how safety systems are turning us into poorer drivers. Mm. I mean, you have, these days, you have, just basic traction controllers fitted to almost any car out there. Mm. Traction control saved me. You have a Hilux standing outside, and it was pouring down last week, as you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I pulled out of Leisureville's parking lot, and that whole car just turned sideways. And I wasn't even stressing. It just, all of the safety systems immediately pulled it back into line. It's like a car will save you these days. Yeah, so why bother paying attention?
Also last week I remember, I was driving the Isuzu KB250, the LE, the base level model, the double cab, 4x4, everything. We had it for a shootout. And on my way home, there was also a bit of mud lying on the road because of the rain and everything. And I might have given a bit too much power going over the mud. And I also went a bit sideways. And it was just like, okay, listen, everything is okay. It's okay, you know? Went a bit sideways, the car just corrected itself.
Yeah.
That was, you also make a good point. You know, it's really, is turning us into bad drivers. I mean, in the olden days, you would just like have to do it yourself. You know, it's like, okay, it's everything's in my hands now. You know, if I crash now, it's my problem.
Yeah.
But with these traction control, if you crash, it's just like, listen here, the traction control failed.
It was a car's fault. It's not me. It's never me. Yeah. It's like that old joke about the oak who, you know, he's telling his chummy about like, just oak, you know, I was driving my new car.
Yeah.
And driving it down the highway, and I went through this puddle, and I went into the gravel, and I went into the grass, and the car rolled a few times, and then it landed on its wheels again, and, you know, we crashed through some trees, and, you know, then we went left, and we went right, and then I drove it into a dam, and that's when I finally lost control.
You know,
that whole ego thing.
Yeah, I know.
Yes, we got way off topic there. Anyways, the Volvo XC91 car of the year. Congratulations to them. We're not 100% sure about the relevance of car of the year anymore. We loaded this news onto our Facebook page, and we can sort of see how many impressions we got. And we got more people liking a photo of a Chev Captiva standing somewhere in the Karoo than people actually caring about the Volvo winning.
That is actually saying a lot.
Is it still relevant? We don't think so. Is Volvo a worthy winner? Yes, we think so. So congrats, Volvo. In any case. Okay, so Hyundai Tucson came to South Africa. You went on the launch.
Yes,
tell us a bit about what happened.
Well, I have driven the Tucson pre-launch. Yeah. You will also read that article in our latest edition of Leisure Wheels.
Yeah, we'll get to the latest edition of Leisure Wheels. We'll tell you in the end what we did in the last month.
Okay.
Okay, in any case, the cover story is 1,200 kilometer drive in the new Tucson,
yes,
which you did. And then
with
you,
Donnie, of course.
With Donnie. And then you went on the launch. So
yes,
if anybody's, you know, sort of qualified to comment on the new Tucson, it's Dion. So let him tell you how it was.
Well, with the Tucson, there's one general theme.
Mm.
It is how surprisingly well that Tucson handles itself.
Mm.
Yeah, going through turns and everything, it feels a lot like a hatchback. You know, it is not a small SUV. I mean, sitting in there, you know, driving, it's like, listen here, this is not a SUV. This is not a SUV. You know, it's a hatchback. And then you are reminded again, listen here, this is actually a SUV. And that is one of the things with a Tucson that is, it's absolutely stunning. It's driving dynamics. Actually, I haven't driven the 2-liter naturally aspirated engine yet. But the 1.6 turbo, oh, what a power plant, eh? It's quite impressive.
The 2 liters carried over from a previous model.
Yes, yes. So I think it's a Euro 2 engine.
Something like that, yeah. It's a wonderful 2-liter in its class. I think it's 115 kilowatts or something. It loves to rev. It's a great entry-level one. But the big news is a 1.6 turbo now. 130 kilowatts, 260 newton-meters of torque.
Yes, I
drove it briefly.
Yeah.
Hell of a thing to drive. Lovely engine.
Mm.
Doesn't use that much fuel. I mean, a diesel would be a bit better, but
yeah,
this is what we're getting at the moment.
Yes, Hyundai did say that there is a possibility that the 1.7 diesel engine might come to South Africa.
Mm.
And they are going to test it at Upington, of course, you know, for South African conditions as well as international conditions. But yeah, we're not too sure with the current exchange rate if that's really going to happen. But anyway, getting back to the 1.6 liter turbocharged engine, it's really amazing. I mean, thinking back a few years, 1.6, that didn't really mean something. That was a standard engine on a small hatchback, like let's say for a Golf or something to the likes of that. And now it is the go-to engine for this Korean manufacturer. You know, just put it on the turbocharger and there you go. It is, I'm saying this so much, but it is sublime. And even on the gravel track, the Tucson is really, you know, it's quite impressive. It's got this new steering system. It's been reworked and everything, but tweaked a bit. And these corrugations in the road, you don't really feel that. Mm. But there is one problem with that. You can get a bit overconfident with it.
Oh, I did,
you know, doing around 80 on a gravel road with these corrugations. It was like, okay, listen, this car is actually, well, it's doing quite well. And
but yeah, probably comes with all the safety systems.
Yeah, actually,
it'll save you. Huh?
Yeah, but then with that speed, all of a sudden it bites you.
Okay.
You know, so I was like, oh crap! Now I got to slow down. That is really enough.
Okay.
You know, and also I mentioned this in my driving impression article as well. That Tucson is tough. Driving with a colleague on the launch, we hit a quite substantial bump in the road and it almost sent us flying. And after that, even the Tucson, it didn't show any signs of rattle or anything. So
good car. Good.
Overall, very good car, yes.
Okay. Last bit of news for this week. In Thailand, Toyota introduced a Fortuna Sportivo TRD, Racing Development. When we first saw the headline, we thought, okay, a faster Fortuna, but it's actually not. It's cosmetic changes.
Mm, okay.
20-inch alloys, red stitching, that sort of thing, a real pumped-out thing. In any case, the new Fortuna is coming. I'm going on the launch at the end of March.
Okay. I'll
give you some feedback. We're going on a massive adventure to Mozambique shortly after that. So,
can't wait for that.
When that comes, we're going to be able to give you awesome feedback on the new
Fortuna. What are we
going to
do in Mozambique?
Not sure yet. Some sand drives. Okay. I'm definitely going to dive.
Ah.
I'm going to go searching for some sharks. Yeah, I'm going to go dive. But yeah, we'll see how the new Fortuna stacks up against the old one.
Okay.
I think it's going to be massively better.
Yeah, I'm considered a new one between the new Hilux.
New 2.8 engine. It's basically the new Hilux with... but the best thing for me about the new Fortuner, I mean, I've seen it in pictures, is it has a bespoke interior.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like the Hilux on the inside. It looks more sort of Prado-ish.
Really?
Yeah. So, looking forward to that car. Okay. Really looking forward to that one. Okay. Driving impression of the week. What do you have standing outside? We have a new Hilux, which is good.
Yeah.
It's a good car. We'll
Vesta BMW i3.
Yeah, we have a BMW i3. You might be wondering what Leisure Wheels is doing with an i3. We're just fascinated with the electric cars, to be honest with you, and we didn't want to wait for an electric crossover.
So we found BMW. Got to drive it now.
We want to drive an electric car now. So we found BMW and went like, Oaks, can we have an i3? And they went, yeah, why not? And we've been driving that. Yes, it's so awesome. I absolutely adore that car. What else is there? Oh, H100 and the Sedona we had recently. Two competitors. Yes, that Sedona was lucky.
Value for money.
Money. And we're talking here proper luxury car.
Luxury,
like in heated and ventilated seats, leather seats. It just feels so magnificent.
Yeah, it does.
Really. What a splendid thing. I mean, H100 on the other hand, I think it's cheaper. Still very much old school. Based on the platform and the interior of the old Sedona. That's more of a tool than the Sedona.
A bit of a shuttle vehicle.
Yeah.
I mean,
but it was lucky. I mean, it's
getting a lot of people from point A to point B relative comfort.
Yeah, the Sedona is getting people from point A to point B in supreme comfort.
Oh, yes. I also had some friends commenting on that Grand Sedona, and they said now they didn't want to climb out. Like, you go along now, I'm just going to sit here.
Yeah. And it gave me the opportunity to test something I've been wanting to do for ages. Electric doors.
Okay.
I have a small son, as you know, and I always wonder about those electric doors. You know, is it going to chop his hand off, or my hand for that matter, or will it stop? So Dion and me minced down to the car one morning and we tested it, and the Sedona will actually stop. If it feels any sort of resistance, the electric door stops immediately. So don't be worried about getting your child's head trapped in the door.
Yeah, that gives you an indication of the attention to detail that has been afforded to that car.
Yeah, and I think at the price, it's just stunning.
No, really. Yeah, we stunning compared car. It the other day, standing outside to the Mercedes-Benz V-Class.
Yeah.
And we think it is much better value for money.
Yeah,
it
and the Caravelle.
It might not look as good. Yeah, there's the Caravelle as well.
Like, even from a top-of-the-line Sedona, the jump to the cheapest Caravelle is 150,000 Rand.
Whoa, it's a lot of money.
And the jump to the cheapest V-Class is 200,000 or something.
Easily.
Easy. And
The top of a range V class is almost €1 million.
I mean,
that is 300 and something thousand more than the Grand Sedona.
Yeah, and it's not any less luxurious than any of those two.
No, cars. I mean, that 300,000 Rand, what you get extra is the Stronic Plus system from Mercedes-Benz, which is basically an active cruise control system.
There's some mood lighting.
There's some mood lighting. Yeah, and a nice infotainment screen.
Yeah.
And great sound, you know, but I mean, that doesn't justify 300,000 Rand premium over the Grand Sedona.
Yeah, I think if you want to buy a wagon in South Africa, Sedona is the way to go.
No, definitely. It's
not even competition. Okay, in any case, next section, the hero of the week. You don't know what it is, but I selected Jeep.
Okay.
Jeep is our hero of the week for... They built a few concepts for the Moab Easter Safari.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is just a bunch of Jeep owners coming together to say, like, well, Jeep is the best, you know, camping style. They built a few concepts. My favorite is the Wrangler Trailcat. Wrangler with a Hellcat Hemi engine.
Oh, I read about that.
530 kilowatts in a Wrangler.
That is a lot of power.
Hopefully
everything gets distributed evenly between four wheels.
I'm sort of in two minds about it because on the one hand, I'm thinking 530 kilowatts in a Jeep Wrangler. Mm. And then on the other side, I think 530 kilowatts in a Jeep Wrangler.
That might be dangerous. Well.
Yeah. Off-road, it's going to be legendary. Mm. I mean, you just power through everything. Just jump it from one to the next. But you're on the highway, 530 kilowatts in a Jeep Wrangler. And you're talking about like...
For spectator value?
Yeah. It's definitely. But for driving, no. Not. Okay. And then on to our biggest 4x4 fail of the week. It's loaded onto our podcast page. All of the things we discuss during this podcast. Images, photos of that Jeep. This fail of the week is a video of a bunch of people in the desert driving around and just failing all over the place. I mean...
Definitely for Luke.
Yeah, this takes place in the UAE somewhere, and I mean, I don't know if you've seen videos of them driving in the dunes, but those oaks are harsh on their cars.
Yeah, that is the guys that also get their cars on two wheels,
believe it or not. Yeah.
They use a ramp system, get their cars on two wheels, climb out and just sit on their cars, you know. It's like, okay, listen here guys, nothing to see,
Just hanging out. I love them for it, you know, like, because they have so much money, they could just smash a car to bits and then get out and have a laugh.
Yeah.
Like, this fail is, it's a Land Cruiser 200.
Okay.
And the oak jumps it spectacularly. But I'm talking about he's at least 10 meters up in the air. And that thing comes down at an angle, and it just noses down in the desert sand, and it flips on its roof. And it's just, oaks just get out, and they go like, wah-ha-ha. It's like, okay, obviously the driver's not smiling. I mean, adrenaline, all of that. But his friends are standing outside, and he's like, and everybody's laughing at him. But in any case, if you want to see some dune fails, and let's be honest, who doesn't want to see dune fails? Go check this video out. Okay, and then finally... we want to discuss the new magazine.
Mm.
It's on the shelves from this week. It'll be in most main stores and cities on Monday, and by Wednesday it will be available everywhere. It's an entirely new design. Under our new editor, Donnie, and he did a magnificent job. What did we do last month? Because somebody asked me...
Was it the April edition?
No, what did we do?
Was the JMC.
We broke a land speed record. Yes, we did. For a Chinese vehicle. Yeah.
Read the magazine to find out
yeah.
more.
Yeah, read the magazine to find out how fast we went. There was
it
no...
is quite spectacular for a Chinese vehicle.
We did it, honestly, because there was no land speed record for a Chinese vehicle.
So basically, we could have pushed it, and it would have been an officially...
Well, we could have gone 8 kilometers an hour, and we would have set the land speed.
Easily.
We didn't go 8 kilometers an hour. We went much, much faster. I'm not going to tell you how much faster, but we went much faster.
Oh, yes.
And,
We went to Lesotho.
We went to Lesotho.
Yeah.
Into compact crossover. We always say to people, listen, this compact crossover is fine to drive in the city, but you wouldn't take it to Lesotho.
Mm.
And then we actually went and took two compact crossovers to Lesotho.
And believe it or not, we actually climbed the Maluti Mountains.
And it was a GWM M4 and a Renault Sandero Stepway.
Yes.
And both made it through. And what surprised us is when we got to the hotel that night, they wanted to take us up to our rooms, and they said, listen, you can only drive the path. You get two options. You either climb the steps with all your luggage, or you can drive it up on the track. Yeah, after a long day of driving. Yeah. Like it was something we drove for like 11 hours or something
Oh, and they were that magnificent 80-kilometer mountain pass from what's that place, Roma, to Semongkong.
Yeah.
Just endless mountain passes.
Yeah. Well, we were feeling rough when we got there. We went less for, we just wanted to park the cars, have a few beers, and just go to bed. So the oak, he said, like, either you carry your luggage up these stairs or you take the 4x4 only track. 4x4 only. And we drove those two cars up on 4x4 only track.
Yeah.
And not even with that much effort.
I mean, it's front-wheel drive cars, you know? I mean, not much more ground clearance than a standard hatchback.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, you know, I'm going to have to rev the nuts off this thing to get it up there. But they both made it up without a scrape
even.
No problem whatsoever. What else did we do? We got a new car, Desiree.
Yeah, there's Desiree.
We bought a Defender Series 2. She already broke down once with you and Donnie in the car.
Yes, and some kind gentleman Donnie likes to call Fricky.
Yeah.
Helped us out.
Yeah.
Apparently he also owns a Land Rover Series 2A?
Defender ownership is, it seems to be that sort of, you know, mate thing.
Like, yeah, no, it's that kind of cult classic kind of thing.
Yeah. It's horrible to drive. Let's be honest.
Yeah, 40 kilometers an hour, it's terrifying.
Yeah, it's absolutely terrifying. Yeah. Donnie says he took it up to 80, though.
That's brave, man.
Yeah, no, it's... yo, that's like probably the bravest thing we did this month, is yeah. Donnie taking...
Yeah, another speed record, nothing.
Yeah, no, it's nothing. Pushing that car up to 80. Yeah. Pushing that car up to 80. Then we just have regular stuff. I mean, we have road tests of the Ranger 2.2.
Mm.
Most sensible car in the lineup, I think. We have our long-term updates of our cars. We actually drive to Korea. Dustin and Amarok is in there. Overall, okay. Then the main feature is the Tucson 1,200 kilometer adventure. Where did you guys go?
We went to Limpopo.
Okay,
I stayed over at Forney Bush Lodge.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it's Forney Bush. I got that horribly wrong before. Didn't work out well.
Mm.
Anyway, yeah, Forney Bush Lodge and Hotel. It's basically an unfenced wild reserve. You know, you go in there, you camp in between the animals almost. And it's just an amazing experience. From there, we went to Sabi in Mpumalanga. We took that mountain pass.
Mm.
I think from where was it? Did it start at Sabi? Yeah. We pushed the Tucson through there, and on the way home, also experienced some rain.
So people can read about all of this, see the photos. There's an awesome photo of you taking a photo of, what was it, a buffalo?
Buffalo, yeah. Actually,
and you had to mince through some bushes around the buffalo.
Yeah, I had to sneak around the buffalo to get that photo,
To get that photo, and he saw you. I think he saw you.
No, he wasn't very happy.
From the image he's like, yeah, you shouldn't be there, buddy. Like,
yeah, no, man.
I'm going to charge you now.
Yeah, no, like, that wasn't the most pleasant experience ever, but I survived.
In that moment, we're going to end with this. As you see, we're standing at 42 minutes or something. That's about how long it takes somebody to drive home these days. So it's all the robots out and whatever.
Yeah, around there.
Any case.
Especially in Malibongwe.
Yeah, especially in Malibongwe. I was in Kasane once in Botswana. And they sort of tell you beforehand what to do if a wild animal is in your way, or, you know, he storms you or whatever. You know, stand still, run away, what's your best option? And we were having another one of those rough days. A former colleague and I almost drove a Citroen C4 Aircross into an elephant.
Would have lost miserably.
So badly. But it was soft sand. And it had a CVT gearbox. So we couldn't lose momentum. And we just went out to shoot that car. And we're on our way back to take the main photograph. It's Leisure Wheels 2 years ago or something. And I couldn't lift. Otherwise, that thing would be bogged down. We'd miss the photo, that small time frame you have in the evenings when the sun is setting. You know, it's like 5 minutes max.
Yeah.
We would have missed that window of opportunity. And an elephant walks out into the road with me mincing uphill on a loose surface. And I'm like, I can't lift. This car's going to get stuck. The boss is going to be murach. So I just kept my foot down. And that elephant just walked away with not even... we're so lucky. And then later that night, I went outside. There's no electricity. And I sort of lit a match. And behind my Hilux I was using for that adventure, there was the outline of an elephant, no more than 2 meters away. And you sort of stand there thinking, what's the rule with elephants again? Do you stand here calm, or do you run away? What's the rule? I just stood there and smoked the rest of my cigarette. And luckily, he didn't maul me.
Yeah.
So, let's leave it at that. If you're going to go outside with wild animals or whatever, Just stay safe, guys.
Yeah, just
stay
away
from elephants. Yeah,
I've heard that actually that little red light of a cigarette at night can quite have the upsetting effect on a hippo. So just be aware.
It's cool to smoke near an elephant, just don't smoke near a hippo.
Yeah.
Cheers, guys. We'll see you next week.